Pastor Eddie Byun from South Korea is deeply concerned about the plight of orphans around the world. The reason for his concern? It's because he read his Bible.
Throughout, especially the Old Testament, when God would say, you know, make sure that you care for the fatherless, the widow, the orphan, the alien, the sojourner. It's about vulnerability. And what that revealed to us, God just convicted my heart one day when I was just praying through scriptures, is that, you know what? The more vulnerable people are in our communities, the more deeply valuable they are to the heart of God. So that if they're vulnerable, they're valuable to God.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. The needs of orphans around the world is a global crisis, and that demands from Christians a global response. Stay tuned. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. We're going to get an opportunity to hear today about how Christians in other parts of the world, particularly in one part of the world, are rallying together with the church in other parts of the world to care for the needs of orphans.
We've said many times here on Family Life Today that family is an international language.
Right.
And certainly the orphan, adoption, and in some countries, foster care are also international languages. And joining us is our field general for Hope for Orphans, a converted Longhorn to an Aggie church in Austin, Texas, Paul Pennington. Paul, welcome to the broadcast. You're turning red because I identified you with an Aggie church.
In my whole life, I've never been associated with an Aggie church until today. You just told a million people.
But Paul's a good friend. He does give leadership to Hope for Orphans, and he's a champion for orphans around the world. Also joining us is Eddie Byun. And Eddie is from Seoul, Korea now, right?
Currently, yes.
Yeah. You grew up in Chicago.
That's right.
But you head up a little church. In fact, it's the largest English-speaking church in South Korea.
Yes.
Share with our listeners a little about that church, including how many people attend it.
Sure. The church at large, including our Korean and other ministries, we have about 60,000 members. Our international community, we have a couple thousand members. All from all over the world, from South America to South Africa. It's a pretty unique diversity of groups that are congregating there.
Paul, tell our listeners how you met Eddie and how the two of you started partnering together in ministry.
Absolutely. You know, a few years ago, we began to realize that about 40 million orphans in the world are among unreached people groups. And Korea, as a Christian country, is situated in a wonderful place to be an influence for that, much less for kids in South Korea. And through mutual partners, I got introduced to Pastor Eddie and really grew to love him, and he invited us. And as we began for the first time to reach out to pastors in South Korea, I had the privilege to actually speak on Sunday morning at his church. And we did the first international If You Were Mine adoption workshop, which we've done here in the United States for many years, in Eddie's church in Seoul, South Korea. And gone on now to do a lot of other things involved in working with them in orphan care and developing on-ramps that they can model for churches throughout South Korea.
Is adoption something in South Korea that has a long history? Is it something people think about much?
You know, well, it started probably since the war in Korea ended with a lot of the orphans that were the result of the Korean War. But culturally, there's a lot of hurdles. It's not warmly embraced by the Korean community, both unfortunately in the church and outside of the church, because of the cultural stigma. One example I could give you is like when a Korean couple gets married in the Korean culture, the wife will never take on the family name. So she will forever be seen kind of as an outsider to the family. Hmm. So there are family registries that everyone gets put on. The wife will never have her name changed to show the distinction. So if the wife can't even have really full family ownership, the thought of bringing in another child to invest so much of your life and money into, that's a very difficult concept for the Korean people to embrace warmly.
If a child is an adopted child, is he treated as a second-class part of the culture?
Yes. If the children do not have parents, if they've been orphaned, if they've been adopted, unfortunately, there is a lot of bias against them.
Yeah. It must have been interesting for you to give leadership to such a large church to bring the concept of adoption that really does have spiritual roots in terms of our relationship with our Heavenly Father.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was surprised, actually, because I was raised in the U.S., and so my understanding of adoption has always been positive, in light of the gospel especially. So when I started to really challenge the church in Korea and the other congregations, you know, there's so many megachurches in Korea. I mean, so many churches around our block, even though we have 60,000, they would have 20,000. Another would have like 800,000. I challenge that. I mean, like, if literally just one church, one of these churches embraced this call for adoption, there would literally be no more orphanages or need for orphan care ever again. But as I challenged the Korean church with that, I was surprised at how much resistance I was getting from pastors, from these church leaders that say, you know what, we're not into that. We don't believe it. And when I would challenge them, especially about the spiritual element, hey, we were adopted by Christ, you know, through Christ. He made adoption possible for us to be adopted by the Father in heaven. They would respond by saying, no, that's just a very symbolic spiritual term. And they did not see it as a real reality. That if it was not for adoption, which God created, none of us could be believers.
And one of the reasons why I asked that question was to understand your country a little better, but also just to take a step back and say, here in America, adoption is really viewed very positively.
Yeah.
And within the Christian community, the concept of adoption is embraced, but the actions of stepping into the lives of orphans and foster care and adopting children is not.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me that such a profoundly spiritual concept can lack the shoe leather, the actual life application for Christians, followers of Christ, to truly engage in going near the orphan.
Yeah. You're going to have to help me, and I think help a lot of our listeners, just get our minds around the idea of a church that has 60,000 or 800,000 members. I mean, what does that look like, and where do you meet, and what do you do?
Every single day of the week, 7 days a week, we have services in our sanctuaries. And on Sundays, they gather in very large buildings, I mean, all these churches. And we do have multiple campuses as well. But for a lot of these mega churches, there is one central campus, a main campus. And for example, like, we'll have maybe like 13 services on a Sunday, you know.
Wow.
And so it's
and how
literally,
many of them will you preach at?
I preach to two of them. Some of the campuses will do a video feed, but also we do have campus pastors that also shepherd those different campuses as well. So they'll provide live preaching at times too.
So church would not be that different in South Korea as what I experience in the United States?
Correct. So if you go to maybe a larger church in the U.S., it would also be very similar, except maybe the time between services might be a little bit shorter in Korea. It really is boom, 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 boom,
because we got to get you out of here and get the next group in.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So it is difficult to maneuver through the hallways after a service.
So let's talk about your church and where its heart for the orphan came from. Obviously, you must have first caught the disease yourself.
Sure.
How did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I always had a heart for orphan care, for adoption. I had a very positive view just through my upbringing, through the discipleship and the worship that I've been a part of through my churches. But when I went to Korea, the thing that kind of ignited this into a more passionate pursuit for me is when I did find out that there are hundreds of thousands of orphans in Korea, and yet we also have millions of believers. And there are some churches that have, just within that one church, more believers than orphans, just in Korea. And when I started to hear about the lack and basically the non-existence of orphan care within the Korean churches, I could count on one hand how many churches in Korea have an active orphan care ministry. And that's shocking for how many missions movements and prayer movements Korea is known for.
Because Korea, South Koreans have sent missionaries all over the world, even to America.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so I think currently we're still top three or top four of mission-sending countries in the world. And for me, I saw there was great contradiction in that. So that's when I started preaching on it, challenging the other Korean pastors and ministries. You know, it's like, we need to embrace this. And that's when I started to feel the resistance. But in light of that, too, one thing that your listeners may not be aware of is that because of the shame factor in Korean culture, one, they do not embrace orphans in general, but they really do not like the fact that so many Koreans have been adopted internationally. They see it as exporting our people, which is also an irony because they won't care for them, and they also are bothered by the fact that other countries would. And so as a result, they've created a quota limit as to how many Koreans can be adopted internationally every year. And they've been reducing that number by 10% every year with the hopes that within a few years, they will no longer even have international adoptions because of the whole saving face shame factor issue.
So since you've started addressing this at the church and stepped up and said, you know, this is not just an analogy, this is the gospel on display. Are your people hearing that? Is anything changing?
Yeah, so as a result, I was looking at the scenario, and I realized initially I need to challenge the Korean citizens to really embrace this. And I felt a lot of resistance. So then the next option for me was the international community, the expat community, which I mainly work with. They're a lot more open to this, but there was no law in existence in Korea at the time that would allow non-Koreans to adopt while living in Korea. They would say, go back to your home country and then go through the international route. But if you have a job in one country, you're not going to make the effort to go back to your home country just to try this adoption process. And so that's when we started lobbying with the Korean lawyers that we have and other influential people within our community. And we've lobbied successfully. So as of last year, August, new laws were created that opened up more opportunities for Koreans to be able to adopt while living in Korea. One was to allow a Korean who is married to an international, they would be able to adopt through the domestic route. And what that means is basically for free. And so that's been huge for the international marriages, for them to be able to adopt through the domestic route. Also, those adoptions will not count towards the annual quota. So that opens up more opportunities. The other thing that we've been able to successfully lobby for is for expats who live in Korea to also go through the international adoption process, but while still residing in Korea. And so several of our church members have been able to be blessed with adopting children as a result of these new laws as well.
You know, Eddie, it's really interesting to me that here we have a country that per capita is sending more missionaries around the world than any other group of Christians. I mean, Koreans are planting churches in Chechnya, but yet this same population, because of bloodlines, does not see the relationship between orphans and the gospel. And I understand that some months now, 2,000 babies a month are going into orphanages in South Korea. They can't come to America, and the South Korean church isn't adopting them. You, on the other hand, have been a courageous leader to stand up and say that there is a relationship between the gospel and these children. How does the sanctity of life piece fit into all of this for you and your church, and why is that important for the gospel?
Sure. You know, a big premise of this orphan movement that God obviously is leading globally in this generation right now, you know, a common verse that you will hear is James 1:27, you know, that true religion, true undefiled religion would be the care for orphans, but also for widows. And when I've been, you know, biblically wrestling with how do I present this to our Korean counterparts and how can I have them understand the biblical premise of why this is central to the gospel, when I started looking at the whole concept of orphans, widows, fatherless throughout Scripture, it's about vulnerability. And what God just convicted my heart one day when I was just praying through Scriptures is that, you know what? The more vulnerable people are in our communities, the more deeply valuable they are to the heart of God. So that if they're vulnerable, they're valuable to God. And so we as a church, we started to ask, who are the vulnerable people in our communities?
I think you made a really important point just a minute ago. You know, we come to a lot of meetings where we talk about orphan ministry and the church and kids that need a family. But what rarely gets talked about that bothers me, and you and I have talked about this, is we kind of leave out the widows. And you mentioned a while ago that it's about the vulnerable and about the widows. How is your church being intentional about loving widows?
Sure. Yeah. So our church, we actually started our own nursing home. In the past, the Korean culture was very respectful towards the older community. unfortunately, within this one generation, that has greatly deteriorated and eroded, where they are not as respected anymore. So suicide rates among the elderly have skyrocketed, divorces amongst the elderly have skyrocketed, and as a result, a lot of times their children would no longer visit or they'd be abandoned. So we realize that also the elderly community that's also obviously growing is vulnerable and needs care. And so our church started this nursing home several years ago, and we care for several hundred to love them and to spend time with them.
And these North Korean refugees that you mentioned,
yeah,
the ones that get to South Korea are really the fortunate ones, right?
Yeah.
What is it like to be a North Korean orphan?
My goodness. It is basically going from one nightmare to another. After escaping the nightmare that the North Korean experience can be. And some of these, they've been born in concentration camps. They've been born in prison cells. They somehow finally escape, and they lose their parents along the way. They get somehow rescued and brought into South Korea, thinking that now they'll be provided for, cared for, loved. But they too get bullied in the schools. Bullying is also actually a growing problem in the South Korean educational systems, driving some of them even to suicide. And so to not have a proper community, especially through the church, that would extend the love of Jesus and the grace of the gospel to them is a real miss of a golden opportunity. To reach that country with the gospel is so hard, but to have opportunities for these refugees to come out and for us to love them with the gospel and to share the gospel with them, it's such a golden opportunity that gets missed out because of these biases.
And are they at risk for sex trafficking as well?
Oh, definitely. Unfortunately, the children and mostly the women and the girls, they will escape across the border outside of North Korea into China. And some of them we also find in Thailand. But once they get picked up, in the past, they may have been primarily reported to the police. But these days, because of the lucrative business that trafficking is bringing in, they'll get sex trafficked. And our partners around the world, we're doing a lot of anti-human trafficking initiatives in our ministry. We have partners globally. They are reporting, they're finding North Koreans, even in the U.S., who have been trafficked, even in all throughout Southeast Asia, throughout Europe, Eastern Europe. They're showing up all over the place right now.
You were saying earlier in a conversation we had that there are as many as 1 million South Korean women who are currently in the sex slave trade. They're indentured servants.
That's right. One thing that the American audience may not know that they should be aware of is that as of a few years ago, the TIP report, the trafficking in persons report that the U.S. government publishes, giving grades of how countries are responding to the trafficking issue. As of a few years ago, South Korean women were found to have been the number one trafficked people group into the United States. Recently, that has changed, at least for the United States demographics, but South Korean women are still the number one trafficked group into Japan currently and Australia. And just in Korea alone, there are more than 1 million South Korean women who are forced into sexual slavery in the form of karaoke bars, massage parlors, nail salons, all of these pseudo services that on the outside it looks like a business, but in reality, these women have been either coerced, forced, deceived, or through debt bondage, forced to pay off their illegal debts through basically sex slavery and prostitution.
You know, Eddie, when we hear you describe what's going on in your country, the question that keeps coming back to my mind is what's the condition of the family? Because at the core of a civilization is a healthy family. And as you describe this unraveling, I have to think families are unraveling in South Korea.
You're exactly right. It is a reflection of the breakdown of the family. Education has become an idol in Korean culture, unfortunately. From the time that they're born, there are long waiting, you know, lines for their children to get into these after-school programs that will tutor them to give them the advantage. And it is not uncommon for first graders. I'm not even talking about high school students who are preparing for their college entrance exams. First graders who will be sent to after-school programs for further tutoring and come home at like 9, 10 p.m. And then as they get a little bit older, they'll be in these after-school programs till midnight, 1 a.m., studying to have the educational advantage. And so with that, you have a very unhealthy upbringing towards the view and value of education. Of course, we see it as important, but it's become an idol within the country. And also, within the family breakdown too, there is a strong workaholic culture within Korean society as well, where the husbands usually will work till 10, 11 p.m. But unfortunately, in the corporate work culture as well, after their work hours, 10 p.m., they have what's called the next rounds. And in Korean culture, if the boss wants you to go, you have to go. And unfortunately, these next rounds of going to bars and karaoke bars, that overlaps what we found with a lot of the sexual slavery that we've been talking about earlier.
I want you to just kind of wrap things up by sharing with our listeners just a good story of how your church, maybe a family in your church, has responded to the orphan in South Korea. Because ultimately, what is a church but a group of families? Mm. Yeah. And when they begin to assume their responsibility, they can make a difference.
Yeah, sure. So there is one family who is a military family. He was stationed by the U.S. Army in South Korea, and he's married to a South Korean wife. And they had two children already, biological children, a son and a daughter. Adoption was never even on their radar. But as of a few years ago, as we've been preaching on this and sharing that this is really a part of the gospel, they felt it's time for them to at least pray about it. Their children were, I believe, like 10 and 12 at the time. They were praying about it, and also, again, the whole foundation of what we're sharing, that this is really about God's heart for the vulnerable, that they're so deeply valuable to God's heart. And so they were praying about it, and they felt led, you know, let's take a step of faith and let's visit a adoption agency and some of these orphanages that our church volunteers at and find out who are some of the least likely children to be adopted. Yeah. They wanted to see who are the most vulnerable. And they saw two girls. They were not sisters. They were not related at all, but they were about 10, 12, and the older you get out of the infant, you know, toddler stage, the less likely that you'll be adopted as well. And so they also, one was also mixed, not fully Korean, and you get that prejudice that would make it very unlikely that she would be adopted as well. So they found two daughters who basically they saw as being probably the least likely to be cared for through adoption, and then they took a step of faith that we want them. And they went through the process. It took about a year or so, and they just received their new daughters as of a few months ago, and then they got restationed. The Army duties restationed them back to the U.S., and they were able to look back and see God's sovereignty and the whole timing of things. God sent them right before we started these initiatives, and right after God gave them their two new daughters, God took them out. So they realized this was part of God's plan.
Well, I sure appreciate you being an international champion on behalf of the orphan, and I pray that God's favor rests upon you and the other pastors of such a large church, an influential church, and pray that you'll be able to turn the culture's values about the orphan and about adopting back to more of a biblical view and esteeming it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Well, and let's hope that Christians who listen to this radio program will respond to what God may be calling them to do. And for different people, that's a different response. Some are called to adopt. Some are called to go near. Some are called to start an orphan ministry in your church. There are all different kinds of responses. But the question is, what is God calling you to do? If you go to familylifetoday.com and you click the link we have for our Hope for Orphans ministry here at Family Life, there are all kinds of resources available to help you engage around this issue and to care for the needs of the most vulnerable people in our world. Go to familylifetoday.com. Click the link you see there for Hope for Orphans to find out more about how you can get engaged. Once again, the website, familylifetoday.com, or call toll-free at 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Now, we just want to say a quick thank you to those of you who get in touch with us and let us know how God is using the ministry of Family Life Today in your family's life. In fact, we got an email this week that said, "Thank you for everything you do. I appreciate your boldness for Christ during this time. Wanted to send you encouragement. I hope you continue doing what you do. My wife listens to your podcast during her work commute. It helps her keep a strong daily relationship with God and our Savior Jesus. I download past episodes from your website for her to listen to. We've attended an Art of Marriage conference in the past. We hosted a powerful and productive small group using the Art of Marriage small group series in our home this year. During our small group discussions, we realized that one reason my wife was coming home more stressed recently was because her podcasts had run out. They really do help every day." Well, it's great to get encouraging notes like that, and we appreciate those of you who get in touch with us and share how God is using this ministry in your life. We also appreciate it when you're able to help support the ministry. We are listener-supported. Your donations make this daily radio program possible. And today, if you're able to make a donation to help support the ministry, we'd like to say thank you by sending you a 2-CD set, conversation we had with Steve Farrar about how a dad can anchor his family in Christ for generations to come. We'll send you a copy of those 2 CDs when you go to familylifetoday.com and click the button that says "I Care," make an online donation, or call 1-800-FL-TODAY, make a donation over the phone. When you do, ask for the CDs with Steve Farrar. And you can also request the CDs when you write to us and make a donation at Family Life Today. Our mailing address is Box 7111, Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas. Arkansas is AR. And the zip code is 72223. And with that, we're going to wrap things up for today. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you and your family are able to worship together this weekend. And I hope you can join us on Monday. We'll introduce you to a couple who faced a real challenge, a real turning point in their marriage. And we'll hear how God did a remarkable transforming work in their lives. I hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.